Hi, I'm Mario Guerra, the two-time former mayor of the great city of Downey, and you're listening, you're watching a special episode of Talking California, Talking Politics, and Talking Downey. So today I have a very special guest here with me. I have a candidate that's running for governor of the state of California. This gentleman has had a great career. He's been an entrepreneur. He's taught at Stanford. He was a strategist for the prime minister of England. Family man, running for governor, has had his own TV show, has had his podcast, a famous author. And I got his current book here with me. And we have here with us Steve Hilton, candidate for running for governor of the state of California. Welcome, Steve.
Wonderful to be with you.
So, well, sir, it's great to have you. So, you are living the American dream
by any standard. Yes.
And you and I are both immigrants to this great country. And so tell us, with all the things you've done, why are you running for governor of California?
It's interesting you started with the immigrant story, and that's exactly right. The California dream, which to me is the ultimate expression of the American dream. For many years, I think when people thought of the American dream.
Yes, sir.
They would think of California in their mind's eye. You know, the beautiful life, a great job where you make enough to raise your family, home of your own, a yard for the kids to play, enjoy the weather. You know, that is the American dream, and California represented it better than anywhere. And of course, that's gone. And we'll get into the details of why and how I'm planning to put it right. But that is right. That is the California dream. And the thing about being an immigrant is that actually you'd certainly appreciate that very, very much, and to have that honor of being an American. I mean, we moved here 2012 with my wife and my two sons, became a citizen 9 years later, 2021. I mean, it's the highest honor imaginable in the world. There's nothing higher than that, nothing better than that, to become an American. But actually, I appreciate it perhaps even more because I'm an immigrant twice over. Because some people may know this, maybe not everyone, that my parents are Hungarian. My stepfather's Hungarian. The whole family's Hungarian. Uh-huh. So my parents left. They fled communism. It was a communist country in the middle of Europe. And they left and they went to England. So I was born in a free country. Although England, it was when in the 70s, particularly when I started becoming aware of politics in very bad condition, very rapid decline.
Yeah.
Which reminds me a little bit of where California is today, honestly. Yeah. But the point about that is that if I think about my journey, my family's journey from communist Hungary to England, and then me with my wife and sons here to California, to me it's a journey towards freedom and opportunity. And that's California. And as the years have gone on, I've been here, 13 years now? As you mentioned, I taught at Stanford. I started a business here. Hosted a TV show on Fox News, all of these things, wrote books. The more that time went on, and I could see how the California dream is just being, really ruined. It's a strong word, but I that's what I feel. And life is so tough for people. The more that went on, I just had this feeling I don't just want to talk about this stuff on TV. I actually want to get back to what really most of my career has been about, which is doing things.
Yeah.
I mean, people know me from the media, but actually I've started and run companies. I've worked in the government. I was senior advisor to the UK Prime Minister. I was mainly responsible when I was in 10 Downing Street for helping to implement our reform program. So I've always done things, not just talked about things. And so as the years went on, I thought, I've had such an amazing opportunity here. I don't know. I feel if you have the chance to try and do something to make life better. As an immigrant, as someone who's been welcomed here, I think it's your responsibility to do that, to try and, hand something on to the next generation that's good and precious.
Well, thank you for that. And, by the way, when you read the book, it's called Califailure. The back tells it all. And I'm not going to read all of these, but it's got the highest poverty tax, the poverty rate, highest unemployment rate, worst homelessness crisis, highest housing costs, lowest home ownership, highest taxes, highest electricity. Actually, I'm reading them all. Highest gas prices, worst business climate, lowest job growth, lowest income growth. And so we've turned this state into having a laughing stock someplace in the rest of the country.
I know. It's so sad. So, I mean, the reason I put that on the back, it's interesting because normally with these books, you know, you have on the back, you know, some blurbs or some people saying how great the book is or Steve Hilton's. Well. I thought, you know what? The front cover, the title's Caliphalia.
Yeah.
And the subtitle
is
Reversing the Ruin of America's Worst Run State. And that's quite a strong claim,
worst-run
state. So I felt that you got to justify that to a certain extent.
Right.
And actually, the facts tell the story.
It does.
It's not just that we're doing not that well or we're falling behind a little bit. No, we are the worst in all of America on pretty much everything that matters.
Yeah.
It's. I mean, right now, as we tape, funnily enough, I was just talking about it because some of these statistics – they change, you know, slowly over time, and you get the data is released every year or so, and then it needs to be updated. I mean, we've been pretty consistent on most of these things. We had the highest gas prices, highest housing costs, electricity costs, all those things. The one that poverty rate has been like that for a long time. The one that does change is unemployment rate, because it's every month.
Yeah.
The new data we all see on the news, they say new unemployment numbers. And they do that state by state as well as nationally. And so I'm always trying to be accurate. And so when we published the book, when we sent that to the press, we had the highest rate. And then, you know, for the last few months, it was like we were second or third or fourth or whatever. Right. Well, right now, today, as we are taping this, we're back up there. California has the highest unemployment rate in the country. And to me, that's almost... in one way, it's the most depressing, because we think of ourselves, the kind of image that I think the story we tell ourselves about California, which I completely buy into and believe, you know, with all my heart, which is we are the home of innovation and energy. We were just talking here in Downey, the incredible heritage here with aerospace and manufacturing and the space program, all those incredible things. That's California, right?
Yeah.
The sort of business and hustle and startups and ambition and energy and all that stuff, energy, innovation, optimism, dynamic, the highest unemployment. That's crazy.
It is crazy.
It's crazy that we're in this terrible situation. And that's why I think it's so urgent that we do something, because we can't go on like this. It's just, it's not just, I always put it this way, it's not actually just for us here in California that this matters.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, it's mainly, you know, I want us, you know, our children and our communities, our neighbors, our businesses to be able to thrive and prosper and whatever.
Right.
But actually, it's bigger than that, because California is not just any other state.
Yeah.
And the way I often put it, I do in the book and elsewhere, is California means to America what America means to the world. We represent something really special.
Yeah.
We're not just any other state.
Right.
And we cannot allow California to just continue this drift downwards into stagnation and decline and businesses leaving and people leaving. And
so
no, it's not okay.
You and I can live anywhere we want to, and we choose California, and you choose to stay and fight and make it better. Folks, this man needs to be listened to. Every time he says something there, it comes true. You were one of the first ones saying, what are we doing closing the schools out
during
COVID?
I'm glad you remember.
No, he brought that up on there. He was early on saying we got to reduce our dependency on China. He was one of the first ones talking, we need better food for our kids in the schools, and everybody say no. He was called insane. He was called insane because in 2015, he said our kids should not be taking their phones to school. And now everybody's doing. LA Unified, the second largest school district in the country, is coming up, has done that, and so many other ones. So anyways, when Steve Hilton talks, you might want to pay attention on there, because
I do love that you remember that, because sometimes I have to try and point that out. And it sounds a little kind of self-regarding. Well, you know, I was right. But actually... thank you, because yes, I do think that it's one of the things that's really important about running for a job like this and doing the job, is that you have to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And you have to be you're clear about things, even if it's not fashionable, it's not the mainstream view. You just got to say, no, this is wrong.
Right.
And
right.
certainly, I mean, all those things. But in particular, I mean, we're coming up on, we hear that Gavin Newsom is doing a publication to to lay out what they did right and what they did wrong in the pandemic. I mean, he says it's going to be a long document, 1,000 pages.
Yeah.
And if it was honest,
950 pages of wrong.
Exactly right. Exactly.
I'm not sure what they did right during another, but so by the way, we were just talking. So Steve, you'd be the third foreign-born governor of the state of California. The first one, and of course, I'm a Homer, former mayor here, Downey. First one was John Gately Downey, 1860 to 1862.
Which I didn't know. Amazing.
So yeah. And then the second one, of course, we both know Governor Schwarzenegger.
Yes.
So you'd be the third one on there. So it's kind of fun to have, you know, you're not doing it for that reason, but it's kind of fun to make a little history on the way. You know?
Well, yeah. And I always say it's funny with Arnold, who I know. And we first met actually when I was working with David Cameron before he became prime minister. We came over here. We're trying to learn about different the way things were being done in different parts of the U.S. and so on. And we met the governor then. And that I don't remember the exact date. Anyway, we hit it off. We became friends. I got to know his team very well. And I joked that, of course, he's Austrian.
Right.
And
right.
As we were just discussing, I'm Hungarian
right.
By heritage. And right. So we have the Austro-Hungarian Empire in history. So it's a kind of a little version of that. You've had the Austrian, now you get the Hungarian. Yeah.
So, you know, I looked this up before. I prepared to make sure that I had all the facts right about you. So a little interesting thing I thought came up on there. Your dad was the goalie on one of the greatest hockey teams in
Hungary. Yes, he was a very big hockey player. That's right, ice hockey. I mean, in England, they say ice hockey. He was the goalie for the Hungarian team.
Yeah.
He played in the Olympics.
I didn't know that part. So, okay, sure. So get to politics, okay? Obviously, anybody that's met you, anybody that's read up on you knows that you're the real deal and you have some great ideas. We're controlled, supermajority controlled in the state. You know, you're actually leading in the polls right now. It's early time, but that's great. It shows you that people are actually listening. You had a great article in the Sunday LA Times, where Kamala Harris really wants the job,
right.
And talking about her, you know, hey, is she really going to get out there or not? And some of the other candidates, whether they'd stay in or not. But they basically said, and I think you said this too, she might have a name ID, but what are the merits there?
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about your campaign. Tell us why you're going to be different and why you have an opportunity to become our great governor.
So I think in terms of the job, I think what I bring to the table is a pretty, when I think about other candidates and other people who've done the job, excuse me, a good combination. I don't want to say unique, because no one's unique, but in that sense, but a business background.
Right.
Working in government to make change happen, experience of that, and the media platform, you know, because that's an important part of making change happen.
You've got to be able to communicate
telling
with
the
people
story. Exactly.
And so,
and so I think that's all useful experience. In terms of the actual urgent need we have for change in California, I mean, one of the things that people say to me is, well, you know, what's your priority or what's the top thing? And I always think of this story. So forget, it's a little bit, sounds off the point, but this is what I think of when people ask me, like, what are you going to do? Is we often go back at Christmas time to England to see friends and family. And then we go on a little trip often in the last few years with another family, kids the same age as ours. And we have a nice trip somewhere in Europe for New Year's.
Great.
And one year, a few years ago, the kids of this other family, they wrote thank you letters. They were always very polite, right? Their thank you letters. And one really stood out to me, this kid who's actually my godson. And he wrote, thank you so much for the wonderful holiday. It was great. My favorite part was all of it, which I thought was such a sort of sweet, like kid thing to say. But when I'm asked what's the worst thing, and I sort of think all of it, like everything is going badly. And you can't just say, well, I'm going to focus on this, I'm focused on that. I do want to make one point, which is, I think the underlying problem in California today is that everything is just such a struggle.
Yeah.
It's so difficult to do anything.
Yeah.
It's if you're a family, it's so hard to make ends meet, to get through the day and the week and pay the bills. If you're a business, particularly a small business, it's such a struggle. Like the taxes and the fees and the bureaucracy, the permits. I mean, I used to run restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
We started two, and that's a really tough business.
You said that. I've heard you say that.
It really means something to me because, in a way, in the restaurant business, you're really on the receiving end of a lot of the very direct stuff that government, you know, that you're affected by, the labor regulations, the bureaucratic processes, the taxes, the, you know, the IRS, the environmental regulations, the cost of gas and electricity, all these things come together.
Right.
If you're trying, and the reason it matters so much is because a restaurant is very low margin business.
Right.
So every dollar is really, it's so tight. And so businesses are struggling so much. And I think that therefore, really the, and that there's a statistical expression of what I'm talking about, which is right now, California is, again, another one of these things where we're the worst in the country.
Yeah.
For the last 10 years, actually, we've been voted the worst business climate in America.
That's right.
The worst.
That's right.
Now, what does that translate into? That businesses are leaving, jobs are not there, that's why we have high unemployment.
Right.
Everything is so expensive, it's getting harder, that's why we have the highest poverty rate.
Right.
And so, to me, the starting point is we've got to really clear away and get rid of just all the nonsense and complexity and cost that make it so difficult and expensive to do anything in California.
Right.
Now, the good news about that is that as governor, even if you have a legislature that's controlled by the other party, which it looks like it will be when I'm elected, you do control the executive branch.
Right.
And a lot of this cost and complexity and hassle and sort of nanny state nonsense that we all have to put up with, it's coming from the bureaucracies, the agencies that are controlled by the governor.
Right.
CARB, the Air Resources Board, which is the reason we have the highest gas prices in the country. And of course, gas prices feed into every business because whether you're delivering food or whatever, it's all part of the story. The Coastal Commission, in terms of getting things done anywhere near the coast.
You can't build anything.
If you're in the Central Valley, I'm spending a huge amount. I love our farmers and our ag industry. I'm a big, big supporter there. The State Water Resources Control Board, you know, the pesticide control. But there's all, there are hundreds, literally hundreds.
Right. Well, wait a second. There's 239 state agencies. 230. That's crazy. That's,
I know. I mean,
crazy.
There's some in the book. I mean, I point out that some of this is just so, it's almost.
See, you're surprised I actually read
some of
those.
No, I know. You actually read the bloody book. Amazing. And so there was, that's like, I can't even remember that. Maybe you remember better than I. I mean, I wrote it like maybe, was it 2 years and a half ago? But the, for example, we have, I mean, I'll get the titles exact, not precisely right, but something like this. We have in California a gambling control commission.
Yeah.
And a bureau for gambling control. You know, like, what do they do? They're the same thing.
Yeah.
And, and then on top of that, I think there's another aspect to this which is underappreciated, which is you've got state agencies and state regulations. Right. Then you've got the counties and you've got local. And then you've got, and especially on something like climate, you've got, which I think is one of the most important drivers of the cost, is the climate extremism from the Democrats.
Yeah.
We all want to protect the environment. And we're California. We love our environment. We love nature and our beautiful landscapes. Of course, that's true. But that's not the same as this insane obsession with carbon dioxide. Anyway, they have, if you look at the way that that's playing out, you've got also these regional air quality. I mean, just right here the other week, wasn't it? They were voting on banning gas stoves.
Yeah.
Only came very close.
That's crazy. You know. That's absolutely crazy.
And so all of that is such a mess. And you've got to really have an appetite for getting into the weeds of it, which I really do, because this is one of the things I did in the UK government.
Yeah.
And I'm not holding that up as a great success story, because in the end, it wasn't.
Right.
Because I didn't really have the political backing. I wasn't the guy. I was an advisor. And in the end, I didn't make the decisions. I was just trying to do the work and help the process happen.
But you got to meet Margaret Thatcher.
I did.
So
but also, the thing I'd say is that I really understood how the bureaucracy works, what its tricks are, and how you actually end up getting the right result, which is to make life easier, simpler, more affordable for Californians. And that's going to be the test of everything I do. And if there's anything that captures it, it is just a basic stuff. I mean, the slogan of my campaign is golden again.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to make California golden again, the golden state that it should be. But what that really means for individuals is, it's really what we started off talking about, restoring the California dream, the basic. Now, that could be something very simple, which is a good job, you make enough to raise your family, a home of your own, safe neighborhood, good school so your kids have a better life.
Yeah.
That's the simple version. Okay. Or it could be, I'm going to build rockets that take us to Mars, or I'm going to design the next amazing, you know, airplane, or I'm going to do, you know, invent some incredible scientific discovery. Yeah. You know, there's no limit to what we should be able to do in California. So the California dream is different for everyone, but it's a place. California should be the place where you can follow your dream and make it happen. And right now, no one's like thinking like that, because we're all worried about you know, paying the bills and the rent and the gas and the this and that.
Everyday
life. It's so complicated. It's such a nightmare to just live here.
Steve, so you've got a couple of plans that I think are amazing. We just got back last night from Las Vegas. My wife and I went there for the change of command. The 6th Army Brigade is there, and I was there with General Davis and Colonel Wallace. Anyways, so we stop at Terrible's, the world's largest gas station, right across, right before the border into California. So we filled up gas there, right, because we like the long drive. 3:29, okay? We came back here the next time I filled up, because we had to on there in Victorville or something, and it was 4:89.
Yes.
In less than 100 and some odd miles.
Yeah, by the way, I mean, I don't know about Nevada. I mean, a lot of that gas that you buy at a gas station, certainly in Arizona. I know in Arizona, I've been down in Bakersfield. I know our oil and gas industry very well. I've gotten to know them well.
Yeah.
And they literally, it's the same actual gas in a California station or in certainly Arizona gas station, and it's like often twice as much. I mean, I was just on Adam Carolla's show, and he had a similar story. He was in, I think he said, Wyoming, and there it all starts with, he said, basically it all starts with a two.
Yeah.
Like the gas prices.
Yeah.
And you come back to LA,
absolutely,
everything starts with a five.
Absolutely.
So why is this?
Yeah.
It's the same product. And it is, I mean, in some cases, literally the same. It's California oil, because we have plentiful oil and gas reserves here in California. But the reason that the gas prices are so high is the direct result of policy choices made by the Democrats. And I don't want to be too partisan all the time. I understand people hate that.
Right.
But like, who else? I mean, they've been in power. It's 15 years of one-party rule.
Yeah.
There's no one else to blame.
And the thing that gets me
Can I just go on the gas prices?
Yeah,
I'm sorry, really get into it. Let's go through it. Because a lot of people focus on the gas tax.
Yeah.
Quite rightly, that's very obvious. You can see that. It's 65 cents, you know.
Yeah.
But that's not the main driver.
Right.
That's not even the biggest component of why gas prices are so high. It's all these climate policies again. And I just call it climate extremism, because it's not even achieving its goals. We'll get to that in a second.
Right.
But just purely on its own terms, you've got the low carbon fuel standard, which is what that ends up meaning is literally we are importing ethanol from Iowa to mix with the oil and gas here in California on the grounds that this is somehow green, which costs more money. So there's the low carbon fuel standard. There's the cap and trade system, which is this totally fake market that they've created for, you know, trading carbon credits. It's classic government bureaucracy.
Yeah.
It's just, let's make up this thing rather than just, you know, if we want to be honest about it, let's say we don't want carbon, we don't want CO2, let's just tax that.
Right.
That would be a simple and honest way of doing it. But because they don't want to do that, because they're just, you know, not like that, they created this unbelievable monstrosity of bureaucracy, the cap and trade scheme. It's been there for years now. And what it actually is a tax on any company that uses produces a lot of carbon. So that adds to the price. Then you've got the refinery regulations, including they have these different blends, summer blend and winter blend, which is all the idea of it was driven by preventing smog. But actually, and of course we want to prevent smog, but smog's been prevented mainly by innovation in car manufacturing.
Right.
The cars are a lot cleaner.
Right.
Never mind EVs, just the cars are cleaner. So you don't need all this. Then there's on top of that a whole bunch of other regulations. And then the final piece is that they're shutting down our own domestic California oil and gas industry. So not that long ago, we used to produce most of the oil and gas that we use in California.
Right.
We used to produce it from our own reserves here in California. There's no pipeline to get oil into California. There's no pipeline with the rest of the country. So whatever we don't use here, we have to ship it in.
Right.
That's what we've been doing. Because basically, this is where it gets so insane, you can't quite believe they're doing this. All of these years of the war on fossil fuels and all these stupid policies that make it more expensive, basically, the amount of oil and gas, fossil fuels we use, is pretty much flat. It's hardly had an impact. We currently have, I think it's 80% of our energy in California comes from fossil fuels. For the rest of the country, it's 81%. So it's made hardly any difference.
Right.
In terms of oil, just straightforward oil used for transportation, it's down by about, I think it's something like 7% over the last 20 years. It's hardly, pretty flat. But we're using roughly the same amount. The big difference is instead of producing it here in California, we're shipping it in halfway around the world on these giant super tankers, which run on this fuel, the most dirty fuel, bunker fuel, spewing out carbon emissions. Right. Our number one provider of oil right now, Iraq. Iraq.
Yeah.
So how's this helped the environment?
I know.
It's insane.
I know.
So all of that added up is why we have these insane elevated gas prices.
Right.
So my plan is to one by one go through all of those things.
And by the way, his plan is to have a $3 gas
tax. And that's the end. That's the end result. If we could get rid of low carbon fuel standard, cap and trade taxes, the refinery regulations that are unnecessary, open up our own oil production, yes, we can get to $3 gas here in California. Which, by the way, you say that to people in the rest of the country, say, well, so what? What's the big
deal? Yeah, we're already there.
We're already there. In fact, I had a conversation with the president about it, and he said, great, you know, you'll win the race just with that. And he says, what about 250? Try 250. I said, I'd love to. I think that's, you know, for us here in California, that's going to be a stretch. But $3, I think we can get there.
Wow. Just think about it. So, you know, families can save $1.50. Let's say you have a normal 15-gallon tank, $1.50. You know, so that's $18, $20 a week times, you know, 4 weeks. That's $80. That's $1,000 a year they'll be saving just on that.
And that's the way I think about it because, you know, the people who've been really hurt by these Democrat policies are the working class more than anyone else.
Yeah.
And so that's the other part of that's why I focus on gas prices.
Yeah.
And that's the other cruelty of what they're doing, the heartlessness of these policies, because they're pushed by all these kind of, you know, we can all imagine the Marin County climate warrior, you know, working from home and their sort of MacBook in their nice house and, you know, Sausalito, or wherever it may be. Okay.
But I like Sausalito.
No, I love it too, but like, come on.
I'm kidding.
But they're not driving 2 hours a day back and forth from work. It's working class Californians doing that in their cars and their trucks.
Absolutely.
They're the ones paying the price for their sort of climate vanity.
Yeah.
And so I'm really, really focused on the people who've been hurt the most by these heartless policies, working class people. That's why for my broader economic plan and tax plan, my starting point was how do we get money in the pockets of working class Californians the quickest? And the answer to that is your first 100,000 of income.
No tax.
No state income tax.
Yeah,
so, course, I'd love to get rid of all of it, but that's not practical.
Right.
It's like nearly half our revenue.
Right,
You know, that's not deliverable. But if you, and so the first 100,000 free of state income tax, and then above that, that, by the way, that helps about 7.5 million households in California.
Wow.
And with thousands of dollars a year.
Sure.
Really, really direct help.
Sure.
But also, we've got to attract, like we were talking about earlier, get business to come back to California and not to leave California. So above 100,000, my plan is a flat tax of 7.5%,
makes sense.
I've done the math on that. I was a fellow at the Hoover Institution, and I got some former colleagues there. We worked together on the math. And the total cost of that is to reduce state revenue by 18.5%. Which is a lot.
Uh-huh.
It's ambitious.
Right.
But it just takes the budget of the state of California back to what it was just before the pandemic.
Wow.
So this is not some crazy impossible dream. This is like, this is what the budget was a few years ago.
Yeah.
Because they've been spending like crazy.
It was, what, 100 and some odd billion, low 100s, when the Governor Brown left us last year, and now it's 224 billion.
No. It's 320.
Oh, 320. It's doubled. Yeah, it's doubled. More than doubled.
In the last 10, it's a very simple number to remember, actually, because it's a neat... In the last 10 years, they've doubled the budget.
Yeah.
10 years. 160 billion to 320 billion. It's amazing.
Wow.
And is everything twice as good?
Yeah.
No, everything's like worse.
No.
And so it's just a perfect example of how spending more money doesn't guarantee, in government at least, doesn't get you better outcomes.
Right. Wow. Well, sir, how you said if you win this election, it'll be a political revolution, which I totally agree, but What do you mean by that? And how do you think that you'll be able to get things done? You talked a little bit about it with the supermajority. How do you, besides executive orders, besides, you know, the executive branch on there, how are you going to make this happen? I want people to listen to it. So when you're deciding on a governor for the state of California, listen to the ideas, the thoughts, the people behind it, not just because in the past they've had some name ID, and you got some people that may have it. If the vice president gets in, she's got name ID, it may not be good. She got her butts kicked on there, but still on there. So anyways, political revolution, what are your thoughts on there on how you can win, and why do you say it that way?
Well, it is because everyone says, don't they? Well, it's such a deep blue state. No chance. Yeah. Republican can't win in California. Yeah. That's what you hear the whole time.
Right, right.
And I'm not saying it's easy to win.
Yeah.
Of course not. But neither is it impossible.
Right.
It's not impossible.
Right.
And so I'll just quickly lay out the path, how I see this being possible, and then what we can actually get done. So first of all, it is more of a Republican state than people think. So when sometimes people look at the legislature and they say, well, and if you look at the ballot, supermajority for the Democrats has been for over a decade. When's the last time a Republican controlled one of the chambers? Like 1997 or something like that. Long time.
Long time.
So they look at the legislature and they think it's kind of like 80-20.
Yeah.
And I think they assume from that the whole state is 80-20. It's not.
Right, no.
And actually, if you look at statewide elections where the whole state is voting, whether that's for statewide positions like governor, lieutenant governor, and all the other ones, or for a Senate candidate, whatever, at the average Republican share of the vote in the last 20 years is around 40%.
Right.
So let's call it 40%.
Right.
Some candidates above, some just below, roughly 40%.
Right.
So you're starting from a base which is higher than a lot of people think.
Right.
It's still a long way to go, but it's not nothing.
Right.
Then you look at what's been happening recently. In the last election in November, 10 counties flipped from blue to red.
Right.
You saw...
And I think all the counties went a little bit towards red.
Yeah, and you saw... Great point. Yeah. And you saw that in, you know, you saw it in LA County and in the Bay Area as well. So there's a real shift going on. So, you know, not to 50%, but there's something happened.
Right.
The tide is turning. You saw in local elections, you know, in the Bay Area, in Alameda County, where Oakland is, in Oakland itself, San Francisco, incumbent Democrats thrown out, George Gascon, of course, in L.A., Huntington Beach, where I launched my campaign in Orange County, largest city in Orange County. 4 or so years ago, the council was 6-1 Democrat. Now it's 7-0 Republican.
Right.
So, you know, things are happening.
Right.
Across the board on ballot initiatives last year, the Republican position won on taxes, on rent control, minimum wage, of course.
We even did that 2 years earlier, too.
Yes, exactly. And same on, of course, the big one was Prop 36 on crime, nearly 70%. So, you know, there's, and then you can add to that right now, opinion polls very consistently showing that there's a majority for change.
Yeah.
The last one a few weeks ago, 60% say the state's going in the wrong direction. 60%. Right. So the question is, can we turn that majority for change into a majority for a Republican?
Right.
And I think that is all about a campaign that is positive and pragmatic, not ideological, just practical things like $3 gas, your first 100,000 tax-free from state income tax, standards in the schools, enforce the law, you know, really practical things.
Right.
Housing is going to be a huge issue.
Sure.
Oh, sorry, it is a huge issue, will be a huge focus of my campaign. It's the first real big issue that I actually spent time working on when I was making this move from just being on TV to starting to get back involved in policy and politics. So very practical issues. I want to end the war on single-family homes. The California dream is a single-family home. And I know we've got this whole ideology now of density and infill and whatever. That's the reason housing's so expensive.
Yeah.
They're saying, well, the only place you can build housing is in the existing development footprint, and the only thing you can build is apartments.
Right.
And of course, that makes the land more expensive because you're constricting the amount of land. And so, and they're adding all these building regulations and so on. So, you know, that kind of thing, a single family home for every family who wants it. These are simple, practical things.
Right. And the state shouldn't tell local government what their zoning should be.
No.
I've been the chairman of the Planning Commission here, And they're telling us, we don't care what you say, local yes. government on there, you need to allow the ADUs there. Even if your neighborhood doesn't want it. And it, we're not
it's
elitist
outrageous. It's
on there.
Outrageous.
It's just people don't want more cars in their neighborhood if they don't want
it. It's so outrageous. And then yeah. but then now they're doing, I mean, this new one, SB 79,
yeah.
is a real outrage. I mean, basically, this is going to mean that anyone can build an apartment building up to 7 stories high, 65 feet.
Yeah.
I mean, it varies, you know, yeah. 6 or 7 stories.
Yeah.
Within half a mile of transit.
Yeah.
They define transit as, yes. it could be anything, like a bus stop.
Yeah.
I mean, they could put one in just to enable it.
Absolutely.
Which
and
they
the developers
will.
Yeah. exactly. We want this, not
exactly.
as that.
Exactly. So the thing is yeah. that, and here's the really important point, because yeah. there's been this narrative from the, you know, the kind of, the, and again, it's driven by climate.
Yeah.
That's what's driving this.
Yeah.
It's like, you can't have, they call it sprawl.
Yeah.
Right, suburban. I call that the California dream.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah,
and
no,
so
we want our own house.
I drive around Southern California all the time, which is they really hate.
Yeah.
That's what the inland. They hate that. I find it magnificent. And you, have, yeah. yes, sometimes the freeways are annoying, but once you get off the freeway, you've got these lovely suburban neighborhoods.
Yeah.
This is the dream.
It is,
and they're lovely, lovely neighborhoods, and that's what I want. And here's the really important number that people have to remember: mm-hmm. when you're told, "Oh, we have to have density. We can't have sprawl."
Yeah.
We already have in California mm-hmm. We have the highest density in the country, because only 5% or so of our land is developed. Only in other states, it's much higher than
people
that.
People don't realize that.
It's
how big
really
we are.
Important. We're so big,
yeah.
and so I'll just give you a number which we calculated. If you increase the development footprint of California from just it's not by 1%, but you add a percent, from 5%
yeah.
to 6%,
right.
that would give you enough room for 10 million
wow.
single-family homes
wow.
with quarter-acre lots, which is a lot,
wow.
plus all the roads and stores and whatever, the schools.
That's interesting. I like the numbers. That's interesting. I didn't know
it's
that.
An amazing number. So, like, we have plenty of room in California, and that doesn't mean, you know, concreting over Yosemite or anything like that.
Yeah.
And you just drive. I'm on the road the whole time. I mean, I'm constantly doing it. I'm pointing out the window. There, you could put some housing there, whatever.
Yeah.
And say, well, it's a fragile ecosystem. Come on. I mean, these are usually used by extremist ideologues
yeah.
to stand in the way. They see humans as pollution.
Yeah.
They don't want people to live the good
yeah.
life.
Yeah.
And I'm dead against that. And so that's going to be a big part of the plan. So I think if you go out there with an optimistic, energetic, positive alternative,
right.
we can turn that majority for change into a Republican majority.
That's
but I think the
message.
Other point is that actually it's a midterm election next year, 2026. Mm-hmm. And there's another way of looking at it, which is that actually President Trump did pretty well in California, considering that he didn't campaign here, better than any Republican for a long time. And
the LA Times came to Downey because Downey went that direction.
Right.
And we're 80% Latino and
right.
60-some-odd percent Democratic.
And so, look, you've yeah. got... So the thing is that if we can get enthusiasm among the Trump voters of California, there are enough of them to actually win next year, to win, because I mean I can again give you the numbers. If you there's a projection of the turnout next year is an average of the last two. That's how you typically do it,
mm-hmm.
and the number is 11.8 million. That's a reasonable estimate of how many votes will be cast next year. 11.8 million. So to win, you need just about half of that, just over mm-hmm. half. Call it 5.9 million.
Right.
That's the target. President Trump just got 6.1 million votes in California. So the votes are there, the Republican, the Trump votes.
Yeah.
And then a simple way of putting it is that if every single person who voted for President Trump last year votes for me next year, I'll be the governor. Now, that's a tall order, because getting
right.
a presidential year turnout in a
right.
midterm when I'm...
Right.
Let's assume right. that doesn't happen. There are other ways to get to that number. But I think that, like I said at the beginning, it's not impossible. It's just very difficult, and that
right.
means we have to really work for it, and that's what I'm doing.
Right, and you're doing an amazing job. I see your social media. You're out at fairs. You're out asking all the right questions on there. You've received pretty positive feedback from voters out there, or citizens, if you will, on there. You look like you're enjoying it too. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I am actually. I really am, because I love this state so much. I love everything about it. Honestly. I love the people. I love entrepreneurs. I love, you know, I'm a business guy, so I love meeting businesses, yeah. learning about what they do, yeah. whether that's in ag or biosciences or local bars and restaurants, you name it. You know, I'm really interested in that, fascinated by the details of how people build great companies. Just regular people give me a lot of energy because I can yeah. feel from them going back to the more negative aspect of it, just the struggle
yeah.
and the real hope that they have that things can change. I mean, I did the July the 4th parade, Huntington Beach. And I was really blown away, honestly. Like, I was taken aback
yeah.
by the support, which is always nice to see. But yeah. it wasn't just the, you know, we love you, Steve, whatever. Yeah. That, okay, yeah. fine. Very nice.
It was more like, we need you. Please.
Yes, this is the point. This is the point. It's very intense. The feeling yeah. that we've got to do something is very intense. And I feel that every single day, more of a responsibility, because people are desperate. Actually, that's not overstating it.
Sure.
They're really desperate. And so I'm enjoying it because it's a beautiful state. I love the people here that I meet, and I'm in everything about it. But it's also, I feel, it's very serious as well, because it's, we got to do this. I really feel that people are really, really desperate.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said earlier on there, you know, you and I can live anywhere we want, and a lot of people can. We love this state so much. You're willing to fight for it. You're away from your family. You're down here in Southern California. You're all over the state and so forth. By the way, that was a really cool car you rode.
Oh, it's amazing. Exactly.
Real quickly, give me the background.
It's an amazing car. So some friends of mine in Anaheim, and they collect cars, uh-huh. and there's a vintage car, and it was a, let me try and get this exactly right. I don't want to mess it up. So it was a Lincoln Roosevelt Sunshine uh-huh. parade car.
Okay.
Very specific. And here's the amazing thing. There are only five of them were made.
Oh,
so it was built for a parade.
Oh,
and that's
wow.
why it had Roosevelt, because it was made for the president.
Wow.
And it was the previous owner was Howard Hughes.
Oh, my goodness.
They bought it
from
Howard Hughes.
Check it out. Look at the July 4th Huntington Beach. Just go down his Steve Hilton social media and check out the car. I was like, wow, where's that? There. So, Steve, this is an opportunity on there. We're going to wind up. I know that you have a lot of other places you're going, and we can't thank you enough for coming here. We reach so much in Southern California, especially all the Latino cities, and,
yeah.
and now we're branching out. Our sponsor, Financial Partners Credit Union, we thank you for keeping us on the show. So what message do you want to tell the California voters at this time? And on top yeah. of that, will you end it? I know this is a plug, but will you end it with your website? So folks, go onto his website, check out his plans, check out his background on there. You won't be disappointed. Yes, I'm a homer. I'm going to be voting for Steve Hilton, so I can tell you that. But that's because I've seen every other candidate too, but I've got to know him over the years, and I think he's going to be an amazing governor. So yes, I am biased and partial, but I love this state, and I'm partial because he's going to do a great job. So, so Steve, if you want to yeah. tell the folks a little bit about what they can do to help and a final message to them.
Thank you. Look, I think the final message is, it's very simple. It doesn't have to be like this. We don't have to put up with this. We are California. We can be, we should be, literally, this is not an exaggeration, this should be the best place in the world to start and raise a family,
yes, sir.
To start and run and grow a business. Nowhere better than California. And I know that there are people watching who remember that and say, yeah, well, that used to be us.
Yeah.
And then there are young people coming out and say, can that be us? Yes, it can. You don't have to move to Tennessee or Florida or Texas or wherever to live the good life and to get the American dream. That should be us here in California, and that's really why I'm running, to make that possible again. And so the best thing, just anyone who wants to help, I really, really appreciate it. This is a big job, right? Mm-hmm. We've got a big, big Democrat machine that's going to be on the other mm-hmm. side. They're very well funded. They got the unions, they've got all the kind of activists and all these NGOs, and we've seen all of that. And so it's not going to be easy. So we need to build a grassroots army. So I'd love people to volunteer to help. We're just getting organized. It's right at the beginning of the campaign. We're doing well so far. But as we move into next year, we're going to really want to build that grassroots army. So if you sign up now, you may not hear from us for a little bit, but you will hear from us if you go to stevehiltonforgovernor.com. FOR, stevehiltonforgovernor.com. I've got to say it a few times because we're having a bit of a problem with Google, actually, that the website isn't showing up. We're working on that. But so you've got to type stevehiltonforgovernor.com. There's a button that says get involved. Please sign up there. We keep a record of everyone, and then we'll be back in touch when things really heat up. And of course, if anyone wants to contribute financially, look, I know how hard pressed everyone is, right? This is not an easy time financially for people, but we do need to build a war chest to take on the Democrats. So anything you can do would be very helpful. SteveHiltonForGovernor.com.
Folks, the real deal. He's given you, he's got the history, he's got the background, he's got the smarts. You've got a lot of information here today. I hope it helps you make a decision on there. It's early. Yes, we're in July. We're a year out, but you know what? The primaries are March.
June. The primaries in June.
Oh, it's, June this year, because it's not a presidential year. So the primaries, see, that's what throws us off in California. We keep switching at the whim. So anyways, look up for Steve Hilton for governor.com. Folks, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Feel free to give me a call. I always put out my cell number, 562-706-4114. 562-706-4114. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Talking California, talking politics, and talking Downey with Mayor Mario.